Om Jnanati Marandasya Jnanana Salakya Shakshur Nivitanyana Tasmai Shri Guru Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanam Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktivedanta Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I was thinking of the spiritual world being the abode of love, the ocean of loving exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. I was remembering how Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj once wrote about the spiritual world, a pastime where Krishna had promised. Krishna had promised to come amongst the devotees, but not just. Oh no. Krishna had to be conquered. And on that occasion, there was a drumming competition, and whoever was able to play the drums the best would attract the mercy of Krishna. So they divided up into groups. One group represented by the cowherd boys, and another group represented by the gopis. And the competition was fierce, and in the end the gopis won. And still Krishna didn't come, because he can never be taken for granted. The story ended there. But Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, by sharing that with us, was there in the spiritual world, at least for that time span. He was contemplating deeply that ocean of transcendental love. Even before coming to Krishna consciousness, he was not an ordinary person. Even before coming to Krishna consciousness, he was a public leader in university, one of the first coming into that all-white environment, majoring in psychology and African studies, one who was part of the movement that changed America, linking up with personalities like Martin Luther King. He was not, even then, he was not an ordinary man. Even then, he was a leader. Even then, he was one who was thinking beyond his self-interest. Even then, he was one who would look at the benefit of others. Once he met Prabhupada and saw the love in Prabhupada's eyes, that he was a changed man. As he stated many years later, that still, although you gave us everything, we have failed to fully realize what you gave. But let us remember that everything we have came from you. Some of us are now serving as gurus. But let us remember that all we got from you. Otherwise, we will be a mouse again. Then, after meeting Prabhupada, he was sold out and was ready to take any risk in preaching behind the Iron Curtain, preaching in communist countries. Somehow or other, trying to put Prabhupada's books in libraries, sometimes at great risk, in East Germany, facing the notorious Stasi, but somehow or other, Krishna protected him on that mission. And he was careful to seek Krishna's protection. By chanting more than the prescribed minimum number, by really dedicating himself full time. It was not that sannyas came somewhere later on as an afterthought. It was within him all the time, because all along he had that eagerness, that extraordinary eagerness, a force greater than what others showed in his sadhana, in his preaching, in his dedication. Not surprising that he took sannyas. For one of the things he was famous was as a dancer. He would dance, as we saw. He would dance, and the one thing about his dancing that always struck me, because I was there so many times when he danced. Dancing in South Africa, in the Ratiyatra Kirtans, or... But the thing was, he never danced alone. Right? He was never dancing alone. He was somehow or other engaging everyone, taking them by the hands. That typical thing in that movie. I've been in it so many times, that he would take us by the hands, make us run forward and backwards, because he was so inclusive. And the whole audience moving, everybody. Or driving the Gurukul boys mad in Mayapur, going around. He was an original thinker. Say a free spirit, if you like. A man who worked by inspiration and from the heart. That was not always understood. I remember his cane with the lion head. Not everyone liked it. I did. And when they told him that it wasn't suitable, I dread that day. It was perfect. A cane with a big lion mouse right there at the front. I liked it. He was ready to embrace people. He was ready to be one with them. In Africa, he went to Africa he took sannyas from Kirtanananda Swami, who had his history, but somehow or other at different sites in his nature, and there was a friendship between the two. And when ISKCON leadership dealt strongly with Kirtanananda Swami due to his activities and decided to expel him, he didn't like it. He would have liked another approach, an approach to make him turn around, an approach to bring him back in. And as a result, he left. He didn't leave ISKCON. Oh no. But he left America and he went to Africa alone, in no man's land, you know, Nigeria, Ghana, there was nothing, no devotee. He was the only devotee in these places. And somehow or other, he turned it around and he connected with people so deeply, and he was ready to reciprocate. They made him an honorable chief, right? And he wore the dress. In that time, he also created his institute. What was it again? Applied Spiritual Technologies, or something like that. Getting old. I went there in Washington, and he became so close to the people he was involved with by extending himself completely to anyone, to any outsider. They could see that here's a saint, here's a wonderful person, because he's emanating love. And that was everywhere. Thus, what he did in Africa is not only creating a few followers, initiating a few people, but he turned the minds of heads of state. He was able to create many temples in that time, all alone. And now, his sannyas disciples, who are now leading, are all from there. He, in South Africa, he was dancing in Soweto. Soweto is the stage of a lot of racial oppression, where with the history of bloodshed and violence. So Krishna consciousness coming with Bhakti Tirtha Swami to Soweto was not a timid appearance. It was not somehow or other trying to bring a foreign teachings to people who were really somewhere else. No, it was a victory march, or a victory dance rather. Everyone danced, and he danced in front. And everyone knew how to dance, and everyone jumped. But just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri, he jumped above the crowd, way above the crowd, and everyone was just looking, and people were saying, "Who is that man?" There also, his life, just like that dance in Soweto, was also a victory, victory march in so many areas. After he came back, after having been in Africa so many years, GBC, sort of feeling, but where is our Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and should come back, and eventually he came back. And when he came back to Mayapur, he brought like a glorious lecture where he described the amazing glory of ISKCON and the success of Prabhupada's movement and how it was changing the world, and that the demigods were reciprocating and appearing and coming down. I don't remember more right now. I was there, but you know, I wanted to look at the video, but I couldn't find the thing, and then I gave up. So that's all I can say about that. But the spirit, I remember, was again a spirit of victory. He came back into ISKCON and brought something into ISKCON which was forgotten. A society that had become regimented. But he brought back the heart. Right? The heart, you know, like when he came back, we all felt, yes, the heart is back again. We are here together, you know, in one family. And together we are just somehow or other all going to together back to Godhead. He created this incredible sense of community and doing it all together. So in this way, his life was a great victory, undoubtedly. But yet we see that he gave up all these things. He gave up his previous identities, as he wrote in that last Vyasa Puja offering, goodbye, what was it, Johnny Boy, goodbye John Favors, was that his name? Yeah, John Favors. And goodbye Bhakti Ganesham, no, Abdul, something Abdul, Tushamba Abdul, yeah, all these things. Goodbye Bhakti Ganesham, goodbye Bhakti Tirtha Swami, goodbye Swami Krishnapad, all his identities. Goodbye, undoubtedly. And that is death, that one has to say goodbye to whatever, and it doesn't come nicely as one plans it. He may have said that his mother planned everything nicely, but death comes in his own way and just takes away and took away his the foot of the dancer. And what can we say? But he was not defeated by this onslaught of destruction, not defeated, because even while leaving, he just died, he left by bringing everyone together. Never had we seen such a departure where he brought someone who brought everyone together, you know, sharing these last moments in so much depth and so much love. I mean, it was just extraordinary. And there also, again, victorious over death, entering into the pastimes, maybe pastimes with Prabhupada, maybe pastimes in the spiritual world, or maybe both. I remember I was with Kurma, our legendary cook who was here recently in Radhadesh teaching a course, and we're discussing, and he said, what do you think? Some say that Prabhupada went back to the spiritual world to resume his eternal pastimes, and others think that Prabhupada went to another universe to again start the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And others think that Prabhupada did both, that he went to the spiritual world and is somewhere in the universe delivering all the others. He said, what do you think? I said, like, well, I don't know, but if I sort of, instead of trying to intellectually answer your question, answer it from the heart, then I think it can't be less than both. It can't be. It can't be. It has to be. For all he did, surely Krishna gave him the spiritual world, but he could not give up preaching, so surely he's preaching somewhere else. So I'm thinking, if Prabhupada is in both places at the same time, I think that Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj is with him in both places at the same time. There, in the spiritual world, dancing in that Mridanga competition, surely, now with spiritual feet, jumping higher than ever. And yet, also somewhere with Prabhupada again, as one of Prabhupada's trusted men, upon whom he can rely, whom he can give an impossible order, and it will be done. How eager was Prabhupada to hear the reports from Ghanashyam about his preaching? Okay. Srila Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj Ki Jai.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. You gave really a wonderful insight. I must tell very honestly, it's very difficult for me to speak, because when I saw Bhakti Tirtha, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just now addressing us on this wonderful video, I don't know, we knew he was aware that he would leave his body, and he talked from that understanding to us. He talked about how death takes everything away, and I still remember how one day an email came from him. It was a general email to all the devotees, and he said in that email, I now say goodbye to my many roles. I say goodbye to John Ferver, to Ghanashyam Das, to Bhakti Tirtha Swami, to Swami Krishnapad. And when I read this, how he was clearing his accounts, how he was closing his accounts. One after the other. It was no longer theoretical Krishna consciousness. It was very practical. He stopped his identification with the material body, with the mind, and he tried to make that transition work. I know that from His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, who was with him at that time when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj closed his accounts one after the other, that every day they had been reading a particular pastime from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the pastime where Madhavendra Puri leaves his body, and they had focused especially on one verse, Ayi Dina Dayat Vanata He Maturanata Kadava Lochas. It's a verse whose meaning is known only to Srimati Radharani, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and to Madhavendra Puri. It's a very confidential verse. And they had every day discussed it. It relates to that part where Maharaj talked about preparing himself of preparing oneself for the spiritual world by thinking about the identity one has there in relationship to Radha and Krishna. I mean, they have been talking about this every day, and sometimes Maharaj was crying because it is a very moving subject to give up the body and to be with Radha and Krishna only. And he had been crying, and then he said something, it cannot get better than this. He had the pain in the body. He was crying, but at the same time, he said, it cannot get better than this. Because he had one of his foot already in the spiritual world. I would like to end, because I can't really say much intelligent things, because I'm very moved inside the heart. My thinking is not working very well at this moment. But I want to end with something which Maharaj once told to me, and then we will hear from Mahatma Prabhu also some memories of His Holiness Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj once described to me when he actually decided to become Srila Prabhupada's disciple, what actually convinced him to take this step, because he did not join because of the glories of ISKCON. He joined despite ISKCON. There was a particular scene in New York. The devotees in black bodies wanted to open a temple in Harlem City. That's the township of New York, which is inhabited by predominantly black-bodied people. Is that correct?
Yes, my wife says yes.
Yeah. Only black-bodied are there. So the white-bodied devotees, they said, no, you black-bodied people can never get anything together. Let us open the temple in Harlem. And this very much hurt the devotees. And when it came to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he thought, yes, another mundane society where bodily identification and racism is prominent. So he had decided to leave ISKCON because he thought that is a symptom of the movement, a very Kanishtha type organization. So here, but he wanted to speak with Srila Prabhupada about it. He went to Srila Prabhupada for darshan and said, Prabhupada, I'm sorry, I will leave your movement because it is also racistic. And Prabhupada said, what happened? And Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj told him. And then Srila Prabhupada made one comment which made Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj turn around and serve Prabhupada's ISKCON and so on. Prabhupada said, they are nonsense and you are also nonsense. They identify with the material body and you also identify with the material body. This is the movement of the soul. It is the spiritual soul. And when he heard that, he understood Srila Prabhupada came from a total different perspective, a total different dimension, and he thought, this is real spiritual life, and I want to accept Srila Prabhupada as my spiritual master. I thought it is significant that at least he told me that this was the point in time this encounter with Prabhupada, this being corrected by Srila Prabhupada, was the point in time where he decided to become Srila Prabhupada's disciple. He could understand the absolute transcendental or spiritual nature of Krishna consciousness. And this wonderful chosen video, I want to thank those who have chosen this video and showed us very much. It was a very wonderful, deep movement. This video, this comes out, and this is when I remember Bhakti Jada Maharaj, I really think he was a true spiritualist, a true devotee of Krishna, who was transcendental. Yes, and all the things which His Holiness Kadamba Ganana Maharaj shared with us, how he always wanted to include everyone. Everyone, mothers, children, old men, homosexuals, and this and that, everyone, welcome in Krishna consciousness, because this is the movement of the soul. I do remember this. When we danced, everyone had to dance. When you were a little moody, he was there, he was smiling at you. He picked you up, and moments later you were dancing, and you liked it because it was absolutely enthusiastic. And oh, how much we danced! Hours without end. Dancing, and chanting. Very wonderful, real devotee of Krishna. Yeah. His Holiness Bhakti Teta Maharaj, Aki. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
I don't know what's been said, so I may repeat something. In 1992, I went to Bhakti Teta Maharaj's place in Washington, D.C. And then I found out that, you know the history, that he had made many devotees in this place. It was focused on African Americans. And then he gradually moved them to Gita Nagari. And so his disciples basically were running Gita Nagari. And none of those people knew they had joined the Hare Krishna movement until they got to Gita Nagari. You know that? No. So he was, you could say, the original Krishna West, or his preaching was really powerful but subtle, but they didn't really understand. They were joining the Hare Krishnas, and probably they wouldn't have joined if they knew. But when they were ready, then he let them know, actually, you're all Hare Krishna devotees. I sure didn't know I wanted to let you know. When we went to visit myself, Gunabhai Maharaj, we went to visit him. We were in Washington, D.C. for the summer. And he was showing us what he was doing. And somehow or other, I don't know why, but I got the distinct impression that he was up most of the night answering emails, that he wasn't sleeping much, that he was so busy and so engaged he was personal with everyone, so that he couldn't sleep much. And actually, later on I found out, someone told me that some nights he didn't sleep because he couldn't keep up with all his emails because he was so engaged. He just had to stay up all night, to personally guide all his devotees. And somehow or other I got that impression when I was there. Anyway, is that true? Does anybody know?
I know that he had sometimes up to 200 emails a day, which he answered.
Yeah, so he must have stayed up. She says it's true.
Yeah, he was always replying in the same day or tomorrow.
Yeah. 200 emails, okay. That's like 200, if you can do one in 5 minutes, that's 1,000, 1,000 minutes? like 16 or 15, I don't know, anyway. You would sometimes have to stay up all night. Anyway, when Kadamba Kanamaraj was speaking, one thing that you said that resonated with me was something I always felt. And you were saying that Maharaj brought the heart of ISKCON, brought the heart back, or was the heart. And I always felt that he was the one who would be rooting for the underdogs. That was always my feeling. I remember once he said that, I am taken care of nicely, but I don't want to be the only one who's taken care of nicely. I don't feel right unless everyone is taken care of the way I'm taken care of. And not many people were speaking like that. So you could really see he was coming from that position of not wanting to be taken care of at the expense of other people's not being taken care of. So I always felt that that was something that he added specifically, but I didn't see coming. I mean, it may have been the sentiment of others, but he spoke it very clearly. There's something you don't know, which is quite amazing, that my first really time with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was in Los Angeles in 1979. And I don't know if you know why he was there. It was very interesting. At that time, Ramachar was the guru and GBC of Los Angeles and the West Coast. And he really appreciated Ramachar so much that he went to Los Angeles to serve him. That's why he went there. He was already a sannyasi. And he went there because he believed in him. And he believed in his power, he believed in his dedication and devotion. And he just went there to take a subordinate position and serve him. And so, it's quite amazing when you think about it. It ultimately didn't work out, and then he went on his own, somehow or other. I don't know why. But that's what he was doing. He was just there to support him. I remember taking lunch with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. I don't know if his diet changed, but in those days, as far as I remember, it was carrots, raw carrots, dates, and nuts once a day. Can anyone verify that? Did he ever stop that?
Later when Prabhupada kind of... there was a pastime where Prabhupada instructed him to do different things.
Oh, he came in a dream or something?
No, well, actually, well, Prabhupada was still on the planet. Oh.
Really?
Yeah, I can
I don't
tell
think
maybe
he followed
later.
It because I think that was after. Anyway, that's it was obvious that he was different from all of us. And from what I remember, he was eating once a day, maybe sleeping 4 hours. And then these lectures he would give in Los Angeles were like I don't know how to describe it, but it was more like I was in a black church than in a Hare Krishna church. And the walls were like shaking. And it was all about missionary work. Kind of like, why aren't you excited like I'm excited? We have to be excited. That was the mood. And no one gave lectures like that. No one lived like him. No one gave lectures like him. No one had that attitude of concern, as I said, like him. So I always saw him as someone unique. There was nobody really like him. And then I think I got connected to him inadvertently after he left, because a lot of the work that I was doing, in the workshops I was doing, people would say, this is what he was doing, and you're doing what he's doing. So I kind of felt this connection, and it wasn't conscious at all, that I was kind of continuing this mood of what he was doing and trying to help people deal with their emotional and psychological life as a foundation for a better spiritual life. So I think my connection continues now with him. In some way, inadvertently, I'm following what he was trying to do. So I think in that sense, we're on that same wavelength. And I always appreciated him. And we were fortunate once we traveled with all the brahmacharis in L.A. and Brahmashwar, and he came with us. We traveled 1,000 miles or so, spent a week or two. And he just very humbly served everyone, didn't take any position. And whenever I was with him, I always felt like he was very transparent, not trying to show off, not trying to make us feel like, hey, look what I did. What have you done? I've done this. Never felt like that at all. but always kind of, when he had to express what he was doing, I could see he was a bit embarrassed, because it was kind of like, if I tell you what I'm doing, it looks like I'm tooting my horn. You have that expression? Yeah. We say in America, tooting your own horn. Mahatma's here. This is what he does. So I remember when we were with him in Washington, D.C., and you know, he was trying to tell us what he was doing, but it was really hard for him to tell us and not glorify himself. So he was having a really difficult time kind of trying to just be humble and express, well, actually I did this, but I really didn't do it. It was very interesting. He just didn't want to take credit. That's my remembrance of Bhakti Maharaj. Thank you.
If I can request some other devotees to share their memories, realizations of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, it can be some small pastime on the car. Please do. Please don't be shy.
A very, very short, but here in Radhadesh, I remember very clearly, it came for the seminars, at the time we had seminars, and at the second stanza of Samsara, the whole temple room was going back and forth, very, and that was 4:30 in the morning in Radhadesh.
Somebody else?
Maybe Ananta Gauranga, you remember something? I know your mother is initiated by His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, and I think as children we had a lot of contact with him. Is that true?
Well, I think everybody who knows him knows that he loved the children. That he loved the children a lot. He made it a point whenever he came. I mean, he would spend 6 months and 6 months when he came back from Africa. He would spend 6 months in Gitanagari, which is where I grew up, and then he would go to Africa and like that. And he always made a point of spending time with us. In the winter time, he would go sledding with us. And you could see picture, he would always wear orange, and this big, bright winter suit, you know, and he would always win somehow. And if he didn't, he would say he did. So I think for all of us, it was like he was so infectious, and for a child to see somebody, you know, you think of grown-ups as boring, but he was so enthusiastic that we wanted to be like him. You know, we wanted to be around him, and the devotees in the community also appreciated so much his complete influence on their lives in every single way. And like Mahamudra Prabhu was saying, he was always wanting to serve. There's also pictures of him in bright orange overalls, and he was out in the garden. I remember he would come out with us, or he would bring us out into the garden, and he would be picking. I remember I was standing next to him. He was picking tomatoes. He did so many amazing things, but he was there, you know, on the ground. That was him. And I can see in my mother, that's why she, to this day, you know, she has 5 kids and a job. She wakes up every morning at 3:30 because he was so loving. Just like, you know, it's 100% all the time, just with you. And he was always asking about us because it was difficult for her, you know, she had 5 kids by herself. So he was always asking about how are the children. And he was always, you saw the picture, he liked to hold them on his lap, the babies, so that was a big influence on my life, and particularly in my relationship with my own spiritual master, Sachinandan Swami, because they were very close. And after he, I always thought, when I was a child, that he was my guru. After he passed away, I was naturally drawn to Maharaj because they were so close. I hope that was okay. Thank you.
If I can just shortly relate to that story, Mahaprabhu, you were mentioning about austerities done by Bhaktivedanta Swami when he was Ghanashyam. So he was part of a library party. They were distributing books, actually these were like pre-ordered books, and so Prabhupada really appreciated that library party. But and then they had like Gaur Purnim in Mayapur, I think first Gaur Purnim something, and a whole library party came, and actually the theme of the first meeting was Bhaktivedanta Ghanashyam Prabhu, because all the devotees in the library complained about him, because nobody could catch up with him. He was doing so many austerities, like getting up like 2 o'clock, chanting so many rounds, eating once a day just by himself, just a little bit, and then doing these amazing feats, like this, with so many books, and everybody felt like really they suffered from low self-esteem, and nobody actually wanted to be a part of his group. You know, they just wanted to do it with other devotees, not with him. So the theme was Ghanashyam Prabhu, and nobody wanted to do that with him. So when he found out about this, that he's a theme of the meeting, and the devotees are not happy with him, I mean, because they kind of cannot catch up with him, he became so distressed and so depressed that he was telling this story. He was walking by Ganga, and he contemplated suicide, like drowning in Ganga, because his last desire was to displease devotees. All that he did was to please Prabhupada and devotees, and now devotees were complaining. So he was walking by Ganga and thinking what to do, to drown, he was really like desperate. And then a servant of Prabhupada, who was just in a nearby house, came by him and he said, "Please, can you just replace me for 5 minutes? I have to go somewhere, and just you just stand by Prabhupada's door, and if you hear that he rang the bell, enter, but he won't, because I'm back in 5 minutes. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was like, "I'm depressed, I'm suicidal, I cannot do that, of course." But then servant just let the scene and let him by himself. And then he was standing behind the door, in front of the door, and Prabhupada rang immediately, actually, rang a bell. And he didn't know what to do, whether to enter, but he still entered. And he was describing how the room was very, very small, like very small. So first thing he faced when he entered the room was Prabhupada's feet, because Prabhupada, the night before, he somehow had an injury. He rolled out of bed or something like that, and he was injured. He was lying in bed with his feet up. So first thing, Ghanashyam Prabhu saw was Prabhupada's lotus feet. And then Prabhupada didn't say anything. He paid his obeisances to Ghanashyam, and then got up. And Prabhupada just didn't say anything. Just show by gestures to the table. And on the table there was a neem oil, very green neem oil. So he showed to his knee to rub the oil to Prabhupada's knee. So Ghanashyam started rubbing the neem oil to Prabhupada's knee, but suddenly, because he was so distressed, that the oil started dripping all over the Prabhupada's orange silken dhoti. So he was leaving stains, and Prabhupada didn't say anything, and he became even more distressed and depressed, and he wanted to get out, to just run away, to cry. He said, I didn't know what to do. And then Prabhupada behaved like nothing's going on and showed to his elbow, where he also had something. And then Ghanashyam started massaging elbow and dripping the neem, bright green neem oil to his kurta, like destroying totally his clothes. And Prabhupada didn't say anything. And Ghanashyam was like on the verge of really like high emotions. So at the end, when everything was finished and he was like totally devastated, Prabhupada just gave him a big, big smile. And Bhaktivedanta Swami related that story. He said that at that moment I had this strong realization that Prabhupada said, "Don't leave, don't be suicidal, don't be depressed, just correct what you have to correct and continue." And since that time, He said, I changed my habit and sense of becoming more like with people, not just so much into my austerities in order to please my spiritual master, but he stopped actually chanting so many rounds in order to spend more time, save more time for devotees. Mm-hmm. So since then he changed, like he was eating with devotees, chanting with devotees, and spending more time with devotees. He changed that. Thank you. He was also one of the first people who came to my country, I mean to ex-Yugoslavia, and the first devotee who came with Prabhupada's books behind the Iron Curtain and planted the seeds, put the books into libraries. So, and he was coming to Sarajevo, to Ljubljana, different places. He was actually recognizing some of the places where he went and has given books. So we are forever indebted to him for that, planting the seeds.
Thank you, Beck.
Anybody else, please? Don't be shy. We just laid how Maharaj influenced your life. Yes, please.
I knew about Tirtha Swami in America, New York, Chicago area in the early 90s and up 2000. And I remember it was the early 90s, he came to the temple in Brooklyn. I was a Brahmacharini living there. And there was a lot of talk about this African-American Swami coming, and he had been in Africa, and he had done all these really far-out, interesting things, and he was bringing all these people with him. And we were really excited. And when he came, it just, like, he lit up the whole atmosphere. He was so effulgent, and he had this whole group of devotees with him, and they danced for hours and hours and hours in the temple room. We'd just never seen anything like that before. We were just so kind of like status quo Hare Krishnas, you know, you do this at this time, you do that at that time, and this starts and that ends, and but the ecstasy was like exploding, and we had just never seen anything like that. And many of the devotees wanted to just kind of go with him, like the Pied Piper. They just wanted to leave the temple and follow him and go to the next temple and do that and do that. And it was a very beautiful experience to have that kind of association with someone who had so much spiritual energy and so much love and was willing to give it to everyone. I used to go to Gitanagari a lot and hear his lectures, and I have to admit that at the time I just didn't quite get it. I just didn't quite get his message. I always felt really bad about that because I knew he was such a great devotee, but I had a really hard time kind of picking up on the essence of his message. But of course I sat there politely and knew that he was a great soul. But it wasn't really until years later when I got to connect deeply with some of his very prominent disciples who became good friends of mine that I really began to understand maybe one of the legacies that His Holiness Bhaktitirtha Swami left. I think he was a true, not only a spiritual leader and a spiritual guide and a spiritual master, but I think actually he was a spiritual healer. And I don't think I think that's a very rare thing, that he had, his message was so much about healing people's wounds and healing people's hurts and bringing people together. I think it was all about community. And I know that many times he would say that if somebody leaves, it's not them, it's us. We've failed to give them the kind of love that they require, and therefore they go somewhere else to get that love. And that we should take responsibility for being able to give that kind of love and sense of community. So nobody would ever even have any desire or need to leave our community. So I think on that level, and also he really gave that to some of his disciples who are carrying on that mission in such a profound way. Of course, one person comes to mind is Vrajalila Devi Dasi, but there are others who have made it their mission too to go around and help devotees heal in various ways, and who have taken on the burden of getting trained to go and be able to help people in a professional way so they can really have that effect. So for me, I've learned to appreciate him as a great spiritual leader and a great incredible dancer and a great healer. And I've really, really appreciate everything that he's done for us and left for us. And thank you very much.